I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I don't know. These journalists, what's their fault? You target them just because they report the news? Just because they document your crimes? Ayman was waiting for his first child to be born. His wife was still in labor, hadn't delivered yet. He was hoping to see his firstborn, but he didn't make it.
As Palestinians mourn five journalists killed in an Israeli strike near a Gaza hospital, an event clearly marked press. The New York Times confirms Israel loosened military rules meant to protect non-combatants more than a year ago. We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with the Israeli journalist, Gideon Levy. Then President-elect Trump says he wants to make America greater, as in larger. We'll speak with a member of the Danish parliament from Greenland about Trump's vow to buy Greenland.
Greenland is still not for sale. We're open for business. We would like to see a bigger U.S. engagement in Greenland, collaboration when it comes to defense, business development, but also education would be very welcome. But Greenland is not for sale.
We'll also speak with Yale historian Greg Grandin about Trump's vow to retake the Panama Canal. And we'll speak with longtime Silicon Valley venture capitalist, author Roger McNamee. He is author of Zucked, Waking Up to the Facebook Catastrophe, about the influence of Silicon Valley and tech billionaires in the incoming Trump administration. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In northern Gaza, the director of the besieged Kamel Adwan Hospital says five medical workers were among 50 people killed in Israeli strikes near the hospital. Israeli forces have since stormed the hospital and forced out 350 people at gunpoint, including about 75 remaining patients. Parts of the hospital were seen in flames. Kamel Adwan was one of the only medical facilities still operating in northern Gaza. The five medical workers killed were pediatrician Dr. Ahmed Samour, laboratory specialist Isra Abu Zaida, paramedics Abdul Majid Abu Alish and Maher Al-Ajrami, and maintenance specialist Faraz Al-Hudali. Elsewhere, a fourth Palestinian infant has reportedly died due to the extreme cold snap in Gaza. And overnight, dozens of people were killed or left missing under the rubble of their homes after Israel bombed residential buildings in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood of Gaza City. Civil defense workers said the strikes killed civilians in their own homes.
15 martyrs have arrived at the Al-Ali hospital, and there are more than 40 civilians still remaining underneath the rubble, according to the family. There was also the targeting of the Islam family, and five people were martyred, as well as the targeting of the Harara family and the martyrdom of an entire family. It was truly a bloody night for civilians, and the question continues as to why these homes are being bombed.
A top famine watchdog organization says it withdrew a new report this week warning up to 75,000 Palestinians in northern Gaza are at risk of famine and are unable to evacuate. The report by the Famine Early Warning Systems Network appeared on the group's website but was removed after U.S. Ambassador to Israel, Jacob Lew, criticized the report's findings, calling its figures outdated and inaccurate, though he did not provide evidence. The Famine Early Warning Systems Network is funded by USAID, the U.S. government agency overseeing foreign aid. In Yemen, at least six people were killed and dozens more wounded Thursday when Israel bombed the capital Sana'a and the western city of Hodeidah. One of the strikes triggered panic at Sana'a International Airport, where at least three people were killed and 30 others injured. The World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said he was just meters away from the blast, preparing to board a flight out of Sana'a as part of a high-level UN delegation. Dr. Tedros was not wounded, but the bombing did injure one of the UN plane's crew members. Yemen's Houthis said they would respond to the attack by meeting, quote, escalation with escalation, unquote. Overnight, the Houthis claimed attacks on Tel Aviv, including Ben Gurion Airport, as well as a ship in the Arabian Sea. A UN-backed hunger monitoring group warns famine is spreading in Sudan 20 months after fighting erupted between Sudan's military rulers and the rival rapid support forces. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification reports more than 24.6 million people, one half of Sudan's population, are experiencing high levels of acute food insecurity. A surge of fighting in Sudan's White Nile, Sennar, and Blue Nile states have pushed more than 80,000 people to seek refuge across the border into South Sudan. Silva Alkibe is with UN Refugee Agency.
This place 2 weeks ago was almost empty. We built a reception center to accommodate a few hundred of people. Currently, we have over 5,000 refugee and returnee who are staying at the border, and many of them also staying at the roadside connecting Ranktown with the border. People are arriving currently from 6 border points, and that requires scaling up of all resources, all our capacity to be able to assist them. People are staying with the community, sharing very limited resources with everyone.
The Spanish Coast Guard says it rescued dozens of asylum seekers from 5 wooden boats just a few miles off the coast of the Canary Islands on Christmas Day. The Canaries have registered the fastest increase in arrivals by sea in the European Union this year, with nearly 44,000 asylum seekers. A new report by the Spanish NGO Caminando Fronteras, or Walking Borders, finds more than 10,000 migrants died while trying to reach Spain this year. Victims were from 28 mostly African nations, though some came from as far away as Iraq and Pakistan. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control reports a sample from the first U.S. patient to suffer a severe case of bird flu shows mutations that could help the virus bind to cells in the upper airwaves of people. The mutations raise the risk the virus could further evolve to spread from person to person, triggering a pandemic. The sample came from a 65-year-old Louisiana resident who suffered from severe respiratory illness after contracting bird flu from an infected backyard flock. Meanwhile, bird flu has killed 20 big cats, including 4 cougars and a half Bengal tiger, at an animal sanctuary in Shelton, Washington. This comes after Northwest Naturals recalled bags of cat food containing turkey after it tested positive for virulent bird flu. The Oregon Department of Agriculture linked the cat food to the death of at least one house cat. South Korean lawmakers have voted to impeach acting President Han Duck-soo, accusing him of complicity in the failed effort to declare martial law on December 3rd. Han's impeachment comes just 2 weeks after Parliament voted to impeach President Yoon Suk-yeol. 192 lawmakers voted in favor of impeachment. Members of Han's and Yoon's People Power Party boycotted the vote and surrounded the speaker's podium, chanting that the vote was invalid. Here in New York, Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul has signed a bill holding fossil fuel giants financially accountable for pollution and contributing to the climate crisis. The Climate Change Superfund Act will require large fossil fuel companies to pay $75 billion over 25 years for climate damage repair, resilience and protection programs. New York State Assembly member Farah Souffrant Forrest hailed the bill's passage into law, writing, quote, corporate polluters have been poisoning our planet and our communities for too long. Now they're going to pay up. This is a win for working people and a step toward real climate justice, unquote. Meanwhile, Governor Hochul has vetoed the TREES Act, legislation that would require New York State to prove it's not purchasing products of that are driving deforestation. It would have been the first anti-deforestation law in the United States. And in Los Angeles, 8 LA sheriff's deputies have been fired for their roles in the arrest and beating of a transgender man outside a convenience store in February of last year. Emmett Brock was driving home from his job as a teacher when he was followed by Deputy Joseph Benza to a 7-Eleven parking lot, where the officer tackled Brock to the pavement and punched him repeatedly in the head, accusing him of resisting arrest, even as Brock cried out for help, struggled to breathe, and made no move against the officer. Deputy Benza and 7 colleagues who allegedly covered up details from the incident were fired amidst an internal review and an FBI investigation. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show in Israel. The New York Times has confirmed past reporting by 972 magazine that on October 7th, 2023, Israel loosened military rules meant to protect non-combatants and gave soldiers, quote, the authority to strike thousands of militants and military sites that had never been a priority in previous wars in Gaza, unquote. The Times reports the order meant, quote, the military could target rank-and-file militants as they were at home surrounded by relatives and neighbors instead of only when they were alone outside, unquote. This comes as the head of Gaza's health agency says he's lost contact with Kamal Adwan Hospital, and at least 50 people have been killed, including five medical staff, in an Israeli airstrike on a building near the hospital in northern Gaza. Meanwhile, in central Gaza, Palestinians attended the funeral of five journalists killed in an Israeli strike near Al-Adha Hospital in Nuseirat. They worked for the Al-Quds Today channel and were in a van clearly marked press.
These journalists, what's their fault? You target them just because they report the news? Just because they document your crimes? Why do you attack and target them? God is my witness, and he is the best disposer of affairs. Ayman was waiting for his first child to be born. His wife was still in labor, hadn't delivered yet. He was hoping to see his firstborn, but he didn't make it. He was martyred before he ever got to see his son.
Also in Gaza, health officials report the fourth infant child in 72 hours has died due to the cold temperatures. For more, we go to Tel Aviv, where we're joined by Gideon Levy, award-winning Israeli journalist, author, columnist for the newspaper Haaretz, member of its editorial board. His new article is headlined, The IDF's Own Sickening Zone of Interest in the Heart of Gaza. Levy's latest book is titled The Killing of Gaza, Reports on a Catastrophe. Gideon, welcome back to Democracy Now! Let's begin with the killing of the five journalists in a clearly marked van, that said press. They were outside of Al-Adha Hospital. One of the journalists was waiting for the birth of his first child, his wife inside in labor.
Nothing will make Israel to admit that they were journalists. The IDF already claims that they were all terrorists, presenting themselves as journalists. You never know nothing. The fact is that this mass killing is going on even now, when you understand there is no purpose whatsoever except of killing more Palestinians. This war should have ended a long time ago, and Israel continues and continues, really now without any purpose except of mass killing. Killing and killing and killing for the sake of killing. And this car of those five journalists is just one example of so many.
And the death of another child of hypothermia, dying of the cold in Gaza during this cold snap, Gideon.
I am much more worried, Amy, about the cold wind which blows from Israel, because those stories are hardly published here, and if they are published, they don't touch anyone. Look what happened to us. Really, frozen babies. Even this doesn't touch anybody. Nobody talks about it. Nobody really seems to care about it. You will hear all kinds of justifications, except of one, that Israel is continuing to commit crimes.
Gideon, your last piece is about what you're describing as a zone of interest in Gaza. I wanted to go to the original Oscar-winning film of Jonathan Glazer and play the trailer.
Are so beautiful.
Yeah. The azaleas there. There are also vegetables. A few herbs. Rosemary, beetroot. This is fennel. Sunflowers. pasta. And here's kohlrabi. The children love to eat it.
The heartfelt time we spent in the Haas house
with Uma Mitz will always be among our most beautiful holiday memories.
In the east lies our tomorrow. Thanks for your National Socialist hospitality.
So The Zone of Interest is an Oscar-winning film about the commandant's own home that shares the wall with Auschwitz. But the film never goes into Auschwitz. It just stays in this kind of paradise. During the Oscar ceremony earlier this year, the filmmaker Jonathan Glazer condemned the Israeli occupation after his film Zone of Interest won for Best International Film. This is what he said.
Our film shows where dehumanization leads at its worst. It shaped all of our past and present. Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October... Whether the victims of October the 7th in Israel or the ongoing attack on Gaza, all the victims of this dehumanization. How do we resist?
So he already talked about the relevance of the concentration camps and the World War II to what is happening today in Gaza. Gideon Levy, if you can share your thesis in your latest piece, the IDF's own sickening zone of interest in the heart of Gaza.
Yes, and it's very unfortunate, but you can't help it. The IDF opened a resort place in the northern part of Gaza for the soldiers to come to have some good time, to refresh themselves from the battles, to rest a little bit. They are offering them massages and very good meals and all kind of benefits just to let them rest. That's fine with me. I mean, the soldiers deserve some rest. But I couldn't help the comparison. Not that there is extermination camps in Gaza, by all means not. But this lack of sensibility, when Gaza is starving, when I talk to friends in Gaza who are fighting over a glass of water or a piece of bread, to open a resort place which offers steaks and barbecues and all kind of other delicatesses to the soldiers. I mean, how lack of sensitivity can still take us? You know, also in Tel Aviv, we continue our lives while Gaza is starving, and I feel very bad about it. But to do it in the middle of the Gaza Strip, when it's all surrounded by death and starvation and rubbles and destruction, to open a resort place for soldiers with all kind of funds offered them, I couldn't live with it, and I couldn't help the comparison to the interest zone, to this unforgettable film. Yes, it is the same. It's the same blindness. It's the same moral blindness to what's going on around you.
Israeli Defense Forces has built a holiday village on the Gaza coast. Sergeant Yaron Rabinovich ate some Cheetos and steak earlier this week. In an adjacent room, there's a physiotherapist who gave a soldier a pleasant massage. The village is surrounded by lawns of synthetic grass, cushions for sprawling in every corner, a soldier enjoying a cappuccino while another has a glass of XL with ice cubes. Where exactly is this area in Gaza?
First, it's in the northern part of Gaza, on the beach. As you know, Amy, Gaza is very small. And when we speak about any location in Gaza, it's next to any catastrophe area. I guess that it's not far away from the refugee camp, which was destructed more than any other refugee camp, namely Jabalia, which 100,000 people had to leave by force by Israel. Let's remember also, who are those 100 people? Those are sons and grandsons and grand-grandsons of refugees from the former catastrophe of the Palestinian people in 48. So to open this resort place, to open this fun village for soldiers on the ruins of Palestinian life, or of the on the ruins of any kind of human reality, is really, I mean, it's really about how it looks more than how it is, because I repeat again, I live in Tel Aviv, which is 1 hour away from this location, and my life is quite normal, and I don't feel good about it, but I continue my life. And still, to do it in the middle of the catastrophe shows how blind morally is Israel and its army.
And sticking with this theme of Auschwitz, the piece you wrote just before your latest, From Auschwitz to Gaza with a Stopover in The Hague. A few weeks ago, Yoav Gallant, the former defense minister, visited with top-level Biden administration officials in Washington, D.C. He was not worried about being arrested, even though the ICC issued an arrest warrant for him and Prime Minister Netanyahu. You write in your piece, Benjamin Netanyahu will not travel to Poland next month for the main ceremony marking the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp over concern he could be arrested on the basis of the warrant issued against him by the International Criminal Court in The Hague. Explain.
So it's, again, Amy, the irony of history. The German chancellor, I guess, will attend this ceremony like every year. Others will attend this ceremony. And the prime minister of Israel, the state which was established on the ashes of the victims of the Holocaust, cannot travel there because he is wanted for war crimes. Do I have to add anything more than this? I mean, again, in Israel, when we live in such denial, nobody cares much about it. But when you think about the meaning of it, the German chancellor is free to travel there, is totally free of any charges, nothing. And the Israeli prime minister, after this horrible year in which Israel killed and destructed in an unbelievable, unprecedented way, is wanted and cannot get to the ceremony. I can't think about a more symbolic way to show what long and tragic way did Israel go ever since it was established until this moment that the head of the Israeli state, the Jewish state so-called, which was built on the ashes of my grandparents, cannot go there because he's wanted as a criminal of war.
Mm. And finally, Gideon, there's another piece in Haaretz, not by you. It's by a psychologist named Yoel Elizur. It's headlined, When You Leave Israel and Enter Gaza, You Are God, Inside the Minds of IDF Soldiers Who Commit War Crimes. And it talks about the psychological stress of Israeli soldiers, revealed testimonies like this. I felt like a Nazi. It looked exactly like we were actually the Nazis and they were the Jews. Can you comment on this and the whole issue of Israeli war crimes? And if you see this ending any time in the future as this back and forth goes on around a ceasefire, we just have a minute.
So in a minute, I will say that Israeli soldiers, ever since the occupation started, act like gods and feel like gods because they can easily decide about life and death of anyone who stands in front of them. It is so in the West Bank, in the occupied West Bank, and it's in much more horrible scale in Gaza. They really play with the lives of people like gods, and this will scratch their personality and their morality forever. Because the easy way that they are killing, and you just mentioned the New York Times investigation about the first days of this terrible war. The easy way that they are shooting and killing anyone in Gaza, like gods who decide very easily, you will live, you will not live, without any explanation. This is, I mean, obviously Gaza is the biggest victim of all this. But I also think about the society which will develop here in Israel with those soldiers coming back home, remembering what they have done for all those months in Gaza, remembering how they react without any moral borders. This will be a damage for a very, very long period of time.
Gideon Levy, I want to thank you for being with us, award-winning Israeli journalist, author, columnist for the newspaper Haaretz, a member of its editorial board. We'll link to your pieces, the IDF's own sickening zone of interest in the heart of Gaza. Levy's latest book, The Killing of Gaza, reports on a catastrophe. When we come back, President-elect Trump says he wants to make America greater, as in larger. We'll talk with a Greenland member of the Danish Parliament and also Yale historian Greg Grandin about his attempts to get Greenland, take back the Panama Canal, and even with his new ambassador pick to Mexico, the discussions of invading Mexico. Oh, and then there's Canada. Stay with us. Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Lord, I Am at Your Door by Rola Azar. As Donald Trump prepares to return to the White House, he's paying more attention to foreign policy and has said he wants to make America greater, as in larger. On Sunday, Trump posted a message online. This was his Christmas message, saying the United States should take ownership of Greenland, which is controlled by Denmark. Trump wrote, quote, "For purposes of national security and freedom throughout the world, the United States of America feels that the ownership and control of Greenland is an absolute necessity." Trump's statement on Greenland was made as he announced he was picking PayPal co-founder Ken Howery as U.S. ambassador to Denmark. But Greenland's not for sale. That was the message from Greenland's prime minister, who responded, quote, "Our country's sovereignty and independence are not negotiable. Greenland is ours. We're not for sale and will never be for sale. We must not lose our long struggle for freedom," he said. Trump's also recently talked about reclaiming the Panama Canal, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes, as well as annexing Canada and even possibly a so-called soft invasion of Mexico. Well, we're going to start in Greenland. We're joined in Denmark by Aya Chemnitz, a Greenlandic citizen and member of the Danish Parliament. Welcome to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us. Can you respond to what President Elect Trump is saying once again? And talk about, you were a member of the Danish Parliament back when he was president and he talked about taking Greenland.
Thank you. I have been representing Greenland in the Danish Parliament for almost 10 years. And I was a member of the parliament back then as well. I used to be a member of our own parliament back home in Greenland before that. And Greenland is not for sale. Greenland has never been for sale. Greenland will never be for sale. And it's quite clear, the Prime Minister of Greenland has said that. And we would like to have U.S. engagement. We would like to have collaboration with the U.S. But it's very clear for us that Greenland is a self-governing country. We have our own parliament, our own government. And anything, any decision that has to do with Greenland is something that is up to the Greenlandic people. And we have a saying in Greenland, which is "nothing about us without us." And I think it's very important, both for Trump, but also for the U.S., to understand that Greenland has the autonomy for a lot of areas that we're covering back home in Greenland ourselves. So I'm representing Greenland on the areas that Denmark is covering in Greenland. So there's a good and a close collaboration. And of course, it could be better. That's the way it is. But I think in many ways, Greenland is really, you know, we're taking care of our own business in many ways back home in Greenland.